Beautiful. Oh, thank you so much. Isn't that a beautiful song? Oh, opens my heart. Thank you, Sean and Tani. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
There's a story that's told about a king who held a contest to see which artist in the land could best paint a picture of peace. And there were many entries to the contest. And the king looked at all the pictures, but there were only two that he really liked. And he had to choose between them. One was a picture of a calm lake with peaceful towering mountains around it. And overhead, there was a beautiful blue sky. And all that saw this, who saw this picture thought that it was a perfect illustration of peace. The other picture had mountains too, but they were dark and rugged and bare, with foaming waterfalls tumbling down, and above was an angry sky with flashing lightning. And this picture did not look peaceful at all. But when the king looked, he saw that next to the waterfall, a mother bird had built her nest, and there in the midst of the tumbling water, she sat on the nest in perfect peace. And the king chose the second picture, explaining that peace does not mean that there is no noise or trouble or turmoil in our lives. It means being in the midst of all those things and still retaining serenity that's always within us. My talk title this morning is Peace in the Midst, and as you heard, that's the theme for this year's Unity's World Day of Prayer, this Thursday. For those of you who may not be familiar with World Day of Prayer, it's an annual event that has been going on for about 20 years, and it's a day when all of the Unity centers worldwide pause in peace together. And so when we do this work, we are joining this whole network of Unity prayers around the world. And if you ever get a chance to go to Unity Village for World Day of Prayer, it's near Kansas City, it's kind of like Christmas. World Day of Prayer at Unity Village, kind of like Christmas. And I've had the good fortune to be a part of that several times when I lived in the area where we started with Oh, all right. Thank you, dear.
No one had to do it.
We'll talk about this later. All right, where was I? I've had the great... Thank you, David. Okay. And what you're seeing here is a procession that goes around the fountains at Unity Village with 1,000 other people, a candlelight procession. And it's just so powerful and magical. So I want to invite anybody who's feeling led to join us on Thursday. As you heard, there's the prayer vigil leading up to it, and then we will walk the labyrinth together with the idea that peace in the midst of all the stuff that's going on in the world, all the turmoil that may be going on in your own life, we can be the presence of peace together as we walk the labyrinth. And we even made it early enough for the choir. If they want to come, they can come early and walk the labyrinth before choir practice. So
all the labyrinth walkers can come and sing.
That's right. Oh, even better. All right. If I join you, you may regret asking that, Sean. But anyway, fabulous idea. So peace in the midst of upheaval, turmoil, depression, anger, anxiety, peace in the midst of stuff in our lives, being the mother bird on the nest when all around us is chaos, and discovering what? Discovering the eye of the storm that lives within us always, right now. That place of peace is within us right now. And we find that place of peace through the power of the pause. This place of peace is our portal to the sacred. It's a doorway that gets us there. Viktor Frankl is credited with saying, between stimulus and response lies a space. In that space lies our freedom and power to choose our response. Power in the pause. And that means we learn how to pause in the midst of being triggered. And isn't that our work? Really, it's our spiritual work. This is our spiritual path because the rubber meets the road in our human relationships. Have you noticed this? You know, it's all about learning to sit on the nest in the midst of chaos when everything in us wants to react, act out, control the outcome, make it go away. Make the feeling go away. Do you know what I'm talking about here? When we learn how to be in the midst of that and be peace, that is our spiritual journey. Now, I recently read that the average lifespan of an emotion to move through the nervous system in the body is 1.5 minutes. Who knew? Who measures these things? 90 seconds, unless you resist it or try to suppress it. Then it lasts forever. Do you see? It truly does. It can just stay stuck. It seems to me that one of the major issues in today's world is an inability to allow these kind of limited, depleting emotions to rise up, take their course, and fall while not acting upon them. So we get triggered, we lash out. We get irritated, we yell. We feel anxious, we withdraw. In short, we allow our emotions to dictate our behavior. It's not a good practice. In all of the work I have done in the prisons over these years, I can't tell you how many times I heard someone say, "One moment of anger changed my life forever." Do you see? And so learning how to do this is such an important part of who we are. Being the change, being peace. It doesn't mean that everything's all rosy for us after that. In fact, probably the opposite. But what a place of power that is when we can be in the midst of it and not react. One of my favorite lessons in the Course in Miracles, I could see peace instead of this. Man, that one landed for me. I could see peace instead of this. Can you feel the empowerment in that statement? Because the truth is that when those storms are raging, they're raging within us. But we hold the key to opening the door to that place of peace when we are in the storm. If somebody else held that key, they would just keep the door closed until they wanted to open it for us. So this is good news for us. Good news. And, you know, we want to pay attention to our emotions, of course. But we may think that our emotions are telling us something, telling us the truth. Pay attention to your anger, let it guide you kind of idea. And I wouldn't disagree with that concept, but I would take another route to receiving the gift. Because although I may think that my emotion is telling me the truth, what I need to recognize is that it's telling me what I believe to be true. See the difference? Telling me what my conditioning is telling me is the truth. What my underlying beliefs are prompting me to see is true. And that is a whole different realm. So instead of feeling the emotion and acting on it in some way, when we can learn to take the pause and to listen to them, we can uncover what we really believe. And the only way to do this is with an internal state of kindness and compassion. Kindness and compassion. We can think of those two as allies on this journey. Because when I do that, I get triggered, I get curious. I start feeling irritated, I let the beauty of compassion accompany that irritation, and the 90 seconds passes, shifting into peace, peace in the midst. I feel anxiety rising up, I shift to compassion for that part of me that's afraid. Now, the caveat to this is, of course, if I'm actually in danger of some kind, I mean, that's no time to sit and analyze and do all that, because sometimes withdrawal is appropriate in that case. Or if I have had some very deep trauma from the past that I'm kind of stuck in, not able to get past, now we want to look into getting some professional support for us as we're doing this work. But if the anxiety that we're feeling is attached to being authentic in some way or a judgment someone has made, that's when we want to pay attention. That's another story. Now, I discovered something about how well this worked one time when I found myself continually getting anxious about a conversation I had when another's offhand remark triggered embarrassment for me about, of all things, my hair. It was no one here. So if you've mentioned anything about my hair, it's not you. I was putting myself in a place of humiliation and revisiting this over and over and over. And finally, I realized something. Wow, this embarrassment, this shame I'm feeling, it's way beyond appropriate for what this is. And so that's a clue that there's something deeper to look at, something deeper to look at. And I decided to see if the 90-second rule applied to this. Could I try it? So in my mind, I went back to that encounter with this person. I heard the words again. I felt the heat rising up into my face. I felt my body contract in this shame. I felt anxiety rising up. But this time, I just stayed with it. And as I brought forth self-compassion as my ally, and instead of running from the feeling, I just held it. I began to speak soothingly to that part of myself, saying, I know you feel bad about this. Everybody does sometimes. You know, you're not alone. I'm with you. Just allowing that sense of being, having someone with me on the journey. And I continued breathing. Little by little, here's what happened. The feeling of embarrassment began to dissolve. The anxiety reached a crescendo and then plummeted. The shame peaked and released. and I re-experienced it within a safe, healing container of loving, kind-heartedness. And as these difficult emotions dispelled, I was left with deep compassion. Compassion for myself, compassion for this person who had said something that I know they later regretted. And I thought, how many times have I done that? Said something and later, oh, I wish I could say it differently. Anybody had that experience? Yes. And as I realized this, my compassion widened even more. For them, for me, for all of us. It's what we do. It's part of being human. And then, in this state I was in, suddenly I saw that this person's remarks had nothing to do with me. Never did. It was a reflection of their own internal state. Wow. When we're swimming in an internal place of self-criticism or self-condemnation, it just feels so much better to project it onto somebody else. Wouldn't you agree? Yogi Bhajan said, if you're willing to look at another person's behavior towards you as a reflection of the state of their relationship with themselves, rather than a statement about your value as a person, you will, over a period of time, cease to react at all. Do you see? Peace in the midst. And then you have the power to respond in love. And that doesn't excuse the behavior or condone purposely trying to harm another or make someone feel bad. But we can have compassion while we put a stop to it. See, it's the power in the pause. And as I thought back to the embarrassing moment, nothing. Nothing. Not one slight moment of discomfort. It was neutralized. And now I could safely look at the belief that it had touched, and I could do so objectively and with self-compassion instead of cringing and trying to run away from the memory. Am I the only one who ever does that? Yes. And I realized how effectively doing this work eases the emotion, and yes, within a minute and a half. Not even the entire space of a commercial break for your favorite television show. What a great use of my time that was. And it held such amazing transformational potential. And we all have that powerful place of peace within us right now, right here. And with practice, we can find our way to it, no matter what's happening in our outer world. There's a story in the Gospels about Jesus and the disciples. They're out in a boat together. It's a well-known story. On a lake, and Jesus falls asleep. And then a huge storm blows in, and the waves are high, and the disciples are frightened, and they wake up Jesus saying, help us, we're going to drown. And there it is. There's the actual footage. So he stretches out his arms, and he says, do you know what it is? Peace be still. And the wind ceased. What a great metaphysical story that is. When we awaken our true self through self-compassion, we calm the storms. Do you feel that? You have within you the Christ presence, your authentic self, your higher self, whatever you want to call it. Wake it up with self-compassion. We cannot control the outer events or the people in our lives. Have you noticed? But we do have complete control over our response as we let the deeper intelligence of the heart guide us. James Allen said, calmness of mind is one of the beautiful jewels of wisdom. You see, that deeper intelligence becomes available to us You might say, well, my story is small potatoes. And you would be right. Except it wasn't to me. Do you see? It was really bothering me. It was haunting me. It wouldn't go away. And I kept hanging on to it, reliving that embarrassing moment. And that overreaction in and of itself is a key. It's a sign that there's something deeper here to look at. Being triggered like that means there's some kind of limiting belief lurking in the shadows. And the good news is this, because it's small potatoes, it's safe to explore. You see? But for me, this practice made all the difference between a state of hellishness and a state of wholeness. I found myself resting in the presence of spirit rather than stuck in the unhappy emotional soup that I had been swimming in. There's a quirky little Buddhist story that I just read recently about how every year, before the rainy season, monks would gather together with Buddha, and they would receive spiritual teachings, instruction, and then they would head off to some place for a 3-month rain retreat during the rainy season. One year, the story goes, they found the most beautiful forest, the perfect place to meditate. Except what they didn't know was that there were tree spirits who didn't want them there. And so these spirits created terrifying illusions of monsters and demons, and the monks hightailed it out straight back to Buddha, where they received the unwelcome news that they needed to return and face these demons. Now, are you hearing the metaphysics here? This time, however, he gave them a practice to take with them of sending forth loving kindness as their meditation. And as the monks continued to practice, the tree spirits became so infused with goodwill that they turned into people and served them food and took care of the monks while they visited. So what's the message of this story? That any inner demons we may be facing can be shifted with our allies of self-compassion. Don't be fooled by the simplicity of this. This is a powerful, powerful practice. You are expressing who you really are when you are being compassionate in action. Do you feel that? The correct answer is yes. Marcus Borg says, compassion is a grace, not an achievement. Its constancy does not ultimately depend upon an effort of will, but upon a relationship to the spirit. You see, it's the spirit within us that does the loving. We just have to get out of the way. And ironically, the more self-aware we become in this way, the less self-obsessed we are. The more self-aware, the less self-obsessed. And the reason is because the false self loses its grip on us. You see? It begins to deconstruct. There's a spaciousness that arises, an awakening of the authentic self. And when all that is not pure presence dissolves, infinite beauty is all that's left. I love that. And it's within you right now. Peace in the midst means that the pause is available to all of us in this now moment because the storm rages within us. And it really is time to start living as the powerhouses that we are. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah. Yes, it's time. Peace be still. So here's a practice to try this week or whenever you're feeling triggered by another's judgment. And remember, this is not to be used if you're in a dangerous situation of some kind or are suffering from severe trauma. We're talking about small potatoes or the paper cuts. So I have 3 slides one with each of these steps. And if you're one of those folks who likes to take pictures, you want to get a picture of all three. We need bigger words so everybody can read from the back. First one is spend some time in the silence as you allow the emotion to rise up. And remember that the life cycle of an emotion is 90 seconds if we don't try to squash it or resist it, push it away. The second step, invite self-compassion to come forth. Create a pool of tenderness that accompanies you on this journey. The same way you would if a child came up to you needing comfort and safety, how would you act towards him or her? That's how you need to act toward yourself. It's very important. This is a critical step. You can't skip this one. And then, as you feel the emotion peak and then begin to subside in this container of self-compassion, ask your heart, what's the limiting belief behind the triggering moment? And let gratitude rise up from within you for the opportunity to neutralize, you know, whatever it is. It could be a long-standing pattern in your life. Let it rise. Let it fall. Move on. 90 seconds. Or a lifetime. You get to choose. And so it is.
Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love.